Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. With less than a month to go before Election Day, we've been taking a closer look at the ballot questions that Massachusetts voters are considering and will have to vote on in November. Today, the debate over question two, the Massachusetts Expansion of Bottle Deposits Initiative.
It's a measure that seeks to expand the state's 5-cent beverage container deposit on carbonated beverages. And it wants to include bottled water and other non-carbonated beverages like juice, iced tea, and sports drinks, and require that the current 5-cent deposit to be adjusted for inflation every 5 years. So we've got representatives on both sides of question two with us today. First, Jack Clark. He's the director of public policy and government relations for Mass Audubon and a proponent of question number two. Jack Clark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again, Meghna.
Great to have you. Also with us is Nicole Jambuso. She's a spokesperson for the No on Question Two Coalition. Nicole, welcome to you.
Thanks a lot. Glad to be here.
And listeners, if you've got a thought on whether or not you want to expand Massachusetts' bottle bill, send us a tweet at Radio Boston, or you can give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. So both of you, first of all, let's just start off with your sort of one-minute pitch as to why you either do or don't want to see the bottle bill expanded vis-a-vis question two come November. So, Jack, let's start with you.
Well, Meghna, since 1982, Massachusetts has had a very successful bottle bill, and that's for the redemption of carbonated beverages. And since 1982, we've had 35 billion containers not dropped on the street, or put in the trash, but redeemed. And what we would like to do is look at the on-the-go beverages, as you mentioned. And these are the beverages that would be brought in under the new bottle bill under question two. And we primarily see them as litter and trash along the road signs and parks and forests. So essentially what we want to do is to stop this kind of litter and have these things redeemed. And people are saying, well, they can certainly be placed in the curbside recycling bin. But what we see is while 80% of present redeemable beverages are brought back, only 23% of the non-carbonated beverages are brought back. The rest are tossed as litter and trashed along the roadsides.
Okay.
So, and that cost the state $7 million to clean up.
And trash pickup.
That's
okay, so that's sort of like your elevator pitch for yes on question two. Nicole Jambuso, your sort of counterargument, please.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, those 80-23 numbers that Jack mentions, I've yet to see a study that supports those. I've seen a number of citations, but no actual study. No on question two recently came out with a report that shows that question two simply costs too much and does too little. It'll add about $68 million a year to grocery costs across the board without having any significant impact on recycling. It would only increase the state's recycling rate by 0.8%. And this is because it's an incredibly narrow law. It targets less than 1% of the waste stream. One of our main concerns is that recycling has changed dramatically in Massachusetts since the deposit law passed in 1982. Back then, curbside recycling didn't even exist. Today, 90% of residents have access to either curbside or some type of community recycling programs.
Well, let me just stop you there. And there's a lot of numbers to dig into here because I've seen that 90% number, but I'm looking at an article from the Boston Globe, and they say that the State Department of Environmental Protection says only 47% of Massachusetts cities and towns offer curbside recycling, reaching 64% of the population.
Well, that's curbside specifically. The 90% is curbside or some type of community program like drop-off. So our campaign's been saying all along 90% of residents have access to community recycling, whether it's curbside or drop-off.
Or some other form. Okay.
Exactly.
So Jack, I'm going to get you to respond here in just a second, but there is one more number, Nicole, that I would like you to elucidate for us a little bit, because
okay.
You said that basically that if question two passes, that it would result in a $60+ million, did I get that number right?
Yes.
Increase in costs for Massachusetts grocers?
Absolutely.
So can you explain?
Or grocery costs.
For grocery costs. So in terms of the additional 5 cents per bottle that people would have to pay.
Absolutely. Well, no, that's not the 5 cents. The 5 cent deposit that, you know, a lot of people don't redeem because they're simply recycling at home at the curb now, that's a whole different story. The $68 million just comes from higher grocery costs across the board because under question two, grocers are required to redeem these containers at their stores. So this would mean an influx of bottles and cans that vary in size and shape, as well as, you know, gallons of water that there's no machine to accept right now. So between retail space and sanitation issues that they have to manage, this is going to cost grocers $68 million, and that'll trickle down to consumers.
Okay, so let me give Jack Clark an opportunity to respond.
So here, we've looked at the 11 corresponding states that have similar bottle bills, and the prices in those states did not go up. And I was here in 1982 when the original bottle bill was passed, and the prices of Coca-Cola and Pepsi did not go up, and everything remained the same. What did change, however, was less litter. I remember weeks after the bottle bill went into effect in 1982, there were no Pepsi and Coke cans around the playgrounds where I was, and we know that this will be the same with the present bottle bill. If question two passes, and we're confident it will, that will result in less litter.
So, Nicole, let me just get you to respond to that, because this is something that the yes on question two crowd keeps pointing to, is that, as Jack was saying earlier, that when you look at what is being thrown out, it's the bottles and cans that you can't redeem currently. And that actually has an attendant cost, as was being pointed out earlier, that the state has to clean up the roadside. So
A few things to say there. First of all, I'm familiar with the study that Jack referred to that looked at a very, very small sample. It sent students to a few stores on the borders in New England states and compared just beverages. But these costs will be to groceries across the board. So that study's really not legitimate here when it comes to the concern about grocery costs as a whole. But back to the issue of keeping our streets clean, that is something that I think everybody wants. I don't think anybody would dispute that. The problem is that when you look at Massachusetts doesn't compile that kind of data in an aggregate way. But when you look at states that do, Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, beverage containers make up under 10% of what's found on their streets. So we're essentially spending $68 million of consumer money for something that ignores 90% of the problem. Wouldn't it make a lot more sense to put more recycling receptacles in public places if we're going to spend that kind of money?
Okay, well, Jack, let me just get you to answer that. It's a good question.
Only 23% of the type of containers we're trying to bring in under question two are recycled or redeemed.
That's not
the rest end up as trash and litter, which costs Massachusetts taxpayers $7 million a year. And I'm not sure where Nicole's getting her facts and figures and the $64 million and the $90 million. But the Boston Globe called out these lies in the front page article last Thursday, and we've asked the big beverage industry to pull their ads from the TV station.
Okay, so let me just take a step back here, because what I hear is a distinct possibility in this conversation, and I understand why, is that there are a lot of competing statistics here.
Yes.
And while I respect that, I also don't want us to get stuck down any particular rabbit hole, because I think there are some bigger issues that really the expansion or question two and whether or not we should expand the bottle bill hit on. And I do want to discuss that, because I'm actually already seeing some response from our listeners here on Twitter about those issues. For example, Cheryl Greenwald sent us this tweet saying, increase recycling, not profit for bottling companies. This is about environmental health. Yes, on two. Whereas Tim Buck sent us this tweet saying, vote no on question two. It is not about recycling. Mm-hmm. So let's take a step back here, first of all, and just say and just ask, Jack, let me turn to you. First of all, Nicole made the earlier point that when the bottle bill was first passed in Massachusetts, it just wasn't as easy to recycle. And we live in a different world now. So why is that not enough? I mean, I have to say, like, I you know, try to redeem my nickel for as many bottles as I can, but the ones I can't, I do just put in the blue bin. Most people tend to do that. Why is that not satisfactory?
The redemption programs and the recycling programs go hand in hand. We fought in 1982 for the bottle bill, and it's worked. As I said, 35 billion containers sent back for redemption or recycling. And we know that will happen again. We feel that people will support this. And we're looking at, you know, the campaign, you know, voting yes, vote yes on question two campaign is the Mass Audubon Society, the Mass League, Mass Environmental League, the Mass Chapter of the Sierra Club, the Massachusetts League of Environmental Voters. The opposition is the big beverage industry from Washington, D.C. So we have a grassroots, homegrown campaign to make our Commonwealth a cleaner place.
Okay, so on the flip side, again, I'm just reflecting the questions I'm seeing coming here over Twitter from our listeners. And folks, if you want to, do send us a tweet about question two. We're at Radio Boston. Someone who calls herself Who Harmony is saying, please ask the No on Two advocate point blank, do they just want to see the end of bottle deposits altogether? Why spend multi-million dollar campaign against it, against question two?
Again, our coalition came together specifically to oppose question two. That's our focus. That's what our nearly 3,000 members are looking to do. And to add to jump on something that Jack said, it is correct that we have support from the beverage industry, which employs over 4,000 people here in Massachusetts, and from grocers and many here in Massachusetts as well. That's been disclosed publicly. But our coalition is environmentalists. It's community organizations. It's individuals. It's, you know, businesses, grocers here in Massachusetts who've looked at question two and said it's simply not the way to go.
Well, let me just jump in here because I wonder what it seemed, because earlier you said that part of the problem is that grocers and redemption centers would have to get all sorts of different new machines to accommodate the different types of bottles, et cetera, that it may not necessarily change consumer behavior. In my mind, that might be an argument to like push a reform of question two even farther. Like, what if we, Massachusetts, we got a law to change that made it easier for redemption to happen overall? They maybe assisted grocers, for example, in getting those new machines, et cetera. Would there still be opposition to question two then?
Question two takes us back. That's really the bottom line. I mean, we have developed over the past 30 years modern recycling technology like single stream and curbside, and that's the future of recycling. Jack said a minute ago that curbside and redemption systems go hand in hand. They absolutely do not. Our coalition includes large recyclers here in Massachusetts, as well as the National Waste and Recycling Association. I've talked to these recyclers, and they have told me that question two will absolutely undermine curbside and single stream recycling programs.
Okay,
so it competes.
The issue is that Mass Audubon and the Sierra Club in the 1970s started the recycling programs in Massachusetts with the Department of Environmental Quality Engineering, now DEP, and other state agencies. And we fought hard to have the first bottle bill passed. So we are fully committed to seeing that both programs expand. We have less than half of the cities and towns in Massachusetts with curbside recycling. So we think they go hand in hand. And the Mass League of Environmental Voters, Mass Audubon Society, Mass League of Women Voters, all of our state organizations want to continue to promote both issues.
Let's get a couple calls in here because we do have some folks who want to put in their 2, if not 5 cents. Michael is calling from Quincy. You're on the air, Michael.
Good afternoon.
Hi there. What's your thought today?
Okay, I'd like to talk about just a practical side of this, not the theoretical side of both sides, because there are statistics that'll prove anything. I have a small store, and right now the way the bottle bill is structured, I have approximately 23 different boxes that different beverages have to be dropped into. Budweiser has a box. Miller has a box. And it goes on and on and on and on. If we expand this to waters and juices, I'm afraid I'm going to have 100 boxes. And there's just no room for them in most stores.
Yeah. Michael, thank you so much for your call. Jack Clark, let me just get you to respond to that. I mean, here we have a small business owner who owns a store, and he says it's already hard.
Small business owners, mom-and-pop stores under 3,000 square feet are exempt.
The average convenience store is 4,000 square feet.
And those are convenience stores that are 9-11s. They're the chain stores.
Okay, one more call here. Curtis is calling from Lowell. You're on the air, Curtis.
Hi, hello. I have a little bit of background. I'm from Iowa, where we have the redemption, and I worked as an intern for a microbrewery in Iowa, and one of my jobs was to actually go around to the redemption centers, the retail outlets, and pick up the empty bottles. And what I had to do was write a check back from the company. And what you were saying about the retail space and the costs and everything, that's not true, because we would write 8-9 cent check backs just depending on the policy of the store. So, and then that kind of leads me to question, you know, whose interests are you really representing? Because we had a great relationship with our distributors and everything in the process seemed to work just fine.
Now, Curtis, when you say whose interests are you really representing, who's the you that you're referring to, just for clarity?
The person, what is it, Nicole?
Who's no on question two?
Yes.
Okay, great. Curtis, thank you so much for your call. Let me just get Nicole to answer that question.
Sure. Thanks, Curtis. You're right. There is a handling fee that is paid to the redemption centers, the grocers. Unfortunately, that handling fee just isn't enough under this law. It costs them far more to manage these containers than that provides. So it's still going to cost $68 million. I know you sounded interested in the research and where the numbers are coming from. Our study was actually peer-reviewed and fully endorsed by a professor at Tufts University, Dr. Jeffrey Zabel, who for a living does environmental economics, studies environmental economics. So it's an extensive study that we've had looked at very closely, and these costs are real, unfortunately.
Curtis, thank you so much for your call. We've just got about a minute to go here. And Jack, I wanted to turn this question to you. As you know, I mean, you've mentioned Massachusetts was the first state in the nation to have a bottle bill, right?
Among the first states.
Amongst one of the first states. But it's basically been in a state of suspended animation for more than 14 years. There doesn't seem to be motivation not only on Beacon Hill, but amongst voters. I'm looking at the latest polls. It's like 60% in current polling saying they'd vote against it, and 30% saying, or less than 30% saying they'd, or sorry, 30% saying they would vote in favor of expanding question two. I mean, there just seems to be some sort of lethargy in Massachusetts about doing anything about the bottle bill.
Well, the bottle bill has been successful, and we've been before the legislature to expand it. However, the legislature has refused to move on it. We've got 92 legislators out of 200 that have signed on in support of the legislation. 211 out of 351 cities and towns have passed resolutions endorsing updating the bottle bill. We have 97 organizations throughout Massachusetts that joined our coalition to move the legislation forward. And we've just had a lack of momentum with a few powerful leaders in the State House, hence the reason why we're using this. What is a blunt instrument is the ballot question.
Okay. And we've just got a couple seconds to go, and I know that no one's happy when the other person gets the last word on a conversation like this. But, Nicole, today it falls to you. Just a couple seconds about, I mean, it seems like the momentum currently, with the latest polling, is on your side. But your final thought.
Sure. It defies common sense to ask people to pay for two competing recycling programs. We're paying for curbside and community programs. We need to keep building those programs. But when people recycle at home, they shouldn't be charged additional money for an issue. Inefficient system. That's what question two would bring.
Yeah, alas, but we can always still redeem that money. I just think consumer behavior really is at the center of this entire issue. But thank you both so much for the spirited and informative conversation. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Magna.
Nicole Jambuso is spokesperson for the No on Question 2 Coalition. Nicole, thank you. And Jack Clark, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations for Mass Audubon and a proponent of question 2. Thank you as well.
You're welcome.
Okay, from the bottle bill, let's switch gears to another question that's sparking debate. This has to do with bicyclists and the rules of the road. Brookline police made waves recently when they posed a question on Twitter. Should so-called Idaho stops be legal for bicyclists? This would allow riders to treat red lights like a stop sign. That is, they'd come to a stop, look both ways, and if no traffic is coming, proceed. Simon Waxman likes this idea. He's managing editor of the Boston Review. He's also a bicyclist, and he contributed this piece to Cognoscenti, WBUR's ideas and opinion page.
I log about 75 miles a week in and around Boston. I've also been driving here for about 15 years, so I know that passions, including mine, can flare, whether you're on two wheels or four. We're a fraternity of fighters, Boston drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians. And the pavement is our ring. So shouldn't we try to minimize our interactions? Don't we all stand to gain from knowing what to expect on our roads? I think so. And it's why I like the Idaho stop, at least as an experiment. It's intuitive to cyclists. It makes sense, getting them out of the way and keeping them moving instead of mobbing with drivers at red lights. And while the rule hasn't been extensively studied, what evidence there is suggests that it's safer. According to one study, cycling injuries dropped in Idaho, the state after which it's named, after it went into effect in 1982. Another benefit of implementing the Idaho stop. It will bring the law into alignment with reality. Many cyclists already break red light laws. Others don't. This creates confusion. Get everyone on the same page, and the roads will be more predictable. Opponents of bringing the Idaho stop to the streets of Brookline say, just ticket the cyclists who break traffic laws. But doesn't it make even more sense to have laws that make the roads safer and driving easier for everyone? Boston cyclists, like its drivers and even its pedestrians, are a feisty lot. Most of us on the road are guilty of pursuing the shortest distance between two points. We all break, or at least bend, some traffic laws. So let's say yes to the Idaho stop. It's a rule that acknowledges our aggressiveness, and it can help make everyone's commute a little gentler.
Simon Waxman is managing editor of Boston Review. He's also a bicyclist, and he contributed that piece to Cognoscenti, WBUR's ideas and opinion page. You can find his essay and many others at WBUR.org.
Well, stay with us, because when we come back, we'll take a new look back at the case of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.